DIAP, Episode 5, Security, The Honest Gap, and the Hard Questions. This is Episode 5. Episodes 1 through 4 covered the protocol, the technical integration, the business case, the talent experience, and the cold start. This one is about the questions that skeptics ask. The security model, how does DIAP actually protect identity data? The Honest Gap, what can't DIAP track? And the edge cases, rogue studios, adversarial attacks, international enforcement. The hard questions. Part 1. The security model. Let's start with the most fundamental question. What does DIAP actually store? DIAP stores embeddings, mathematical representations of identity traits, not faces, not voices, not motion data, math. When a studio captures an actor's face with a LiDAR scanner, the raw scan produces a massive, high-fidelity 3D model. That's the studio's asset for their production. DIAP never touches it. What DIAP receives is an identity anchor, a set of one-way mathematical embeddings extracted from that scan by a certified tool. One-way means exactly what it sounds like. You can go from the face to the embedding. You cannot go from the embedding back to the face. It's the same principle as password hashing. When you create a password on a website, the site doesn't store your password. It stores a hash, a mathematical fingerprint. If someone steals the database, they get hashes, not passwords. DIAP works the same way with identity data. The embeddings are high-dimensional vectors, lists of numbers that capture the mathematical relationships within the identity data. Two face scans of the same person produce similar vectors. Two face scans of different people produce very different vectors. The system can verify identity by comparing vectors without ever reconstructing the original face. This is a critical design decision with massive security implications. If DIAP stored raw biometric data, actual face scans, actual voice recordings, it would be the single most valuable target for identity theft on the planet. One breach, and you have the biometric data of every registered talent. But because DIAP stores only irreversible embeddings, even a complete breach of the vault yields data that's useful for verification but useless for impersonation. You can't deepfake someone from a list of numbers that can't be reversed into an image. Now, key management. Every participant in the DIAP ecosystem has cryptographic keys. Talent has keys that sign consent decisions. Studios have keys that sign render receipts. DIAP itself has root keys that sign license tokens. The protocol uses standard public key cryptography, the same kind that secures every bank transaction and every encrypted message you send. License tokens are cryptographically signed by DIAP and are tamper-evident. If a studio modifies a token, say tries to change the scope from one project to another, the signature breaks. The token becomes invalid. The rendering pipeline rejects it. There's no way to forge a valid token without DIAP's private key. Render receipts are signed by the studio's key and countersigned by DIAP. This creates a two-party audit trail. The studio can't deny submitting a receipt because their key signed it. DIAP can't fabricate a receipt because the studio's signature would be missing. Neither party can tamper with the record without the other detecting it. Key ceremonies, the process of generating and securing root keys, follow established security practices. Multi-party key generation, hardware security modules, geographic distribution. The same infrastructure that certificate authorities use to secure the Internet's trust hierarchy. If a key is compromised, emergency suspension protocols exist. The compromised key is revoked. New keys are generated. Affected tokens are reissued. The protocol is designed to survive key compromise without data loss. Part 2. The Honest Gap. Here's what I want to be completely transparent about. DIAP cannot see everything. No system tracks what happens on hardware you don't control. If a studio renders 3,000 frames of someone's face at 2 in the morning on their own GPU cluster and never submits a render receipt, DIAP doesn't see it in real time. That's the honest gap. But let me be clear about what this means and what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean the studio gets away with it. It means DIAP relies on overlapping enforcement mechanisms that make non-compliance extremely risky. The same way tax enforcement works, the IRS doesn't watch every transaction in real time, but the combination of reporting requirements, audits, and severe penalties makes compliance the rational choice for the vast majority of actors in the system. Here's how the overlapping mechanisms work against a rogue studio. First, certification audits. Every DIAP-certified studio undergoes periodic audits. Auditors compare the studio's internal rendering logs with the render receipts submitted to DIAP. If the studio rendered 10,000 frames but only submitted receipts for 6,000, that discrepancy is flagged. The audit is the first line of defense. Second, token expiry. License tokens have built-in expiration. A studio can't render indefinitely on a single token. When the token expires, they need a new one. If they render after expiry without a new token, every frame produced is unauthorized by definition. There's no ambiguity. Third, watermark detection. Every output rendered under DIAP authorization includes an invisible cryptographic watermark. When content appears anywhere, on a streaming platform, in a social media post, in an advertisement, anyone can verify whether it was authorized. Content without a valid watermark is flaggable. Content with a watermark linked to an expired or revoked token is flaggable. The watermark turns every piece of distributed content into a compliance check. Fourth, the heartbeat. During active rendering sessions, the studio's pipeline sends periodic heartbeat pings to DIAP. If heartbeats stop but no render receipt is submitted, the system raises a compliance flag. This catches sessions that start legitimately and go off the rails. Fifth, industry pressure. This is the market mechanism. Distributors, Netflix, Disney+, Amazon, theatrical distributors, can require DIAP verification before accepting content. If your content doesn't have valid DIAP authorization, it doesn't get distributed. That's not a technical enforcement, that's an economic one, and it's the same pattern that drove adoption of content clearance, music licensing, and format compliance across the entertainment industry. Together, these five mechanisms create a system where cheating is possible in the short term but catastrophic in the long term. The studio that skips receipts gets flagged in the next audit. The content without watermarks gets caught at distribution. The expired tokens create a paper trail of unauthorized work, and the industry moves toward requiring DIAP compliance as a condition of doing business. Is this perfect? No. No enforcement system is perfect. But it's the same model that governs financial compliance, environmental regulation, and workplace safety. You make the rules clear, the detection likely, and the consequences severe. Compliance becomes the rational choice. Part 3. Edge cases and hard questions. Let me go through the specific scenarios people challenge me with. What about a studio that operates entirely outside the DIAP ecosystem? A rogue operation that never certifies, never requests tokens, never submits receipts. Can they just ignore DIAP? Yes, technically. DIAP can't force someone to participate. But here's what that studio can't do. They can't access identity data from the vault. They can't get verified embeddings. They can't produce content with valid DIAP watermarks. And as the ecosystem grows, they can't distribute to platforms that require DIAP verification. They become the equivalent of an unlicensed financial institution, technically possible, practically unsustainable. What about deepfakes created from publicly available images and videos? Someone scrapes an actor's photos from the internet and generates a deepfake without ever touching DIAP. This is real, and DIAP doesn't prevent it. What DIAP does is make authorized content verifiable. When a deepfake circulates, anyone can check. Does this have a valid DIAP watermark? If not, it's either unauthorized or wasn't produced through a DIAP-certified pipeline. This doesn't stop the deepfake from being created, but it creates a clear signal for platforms, distributors, and audiences about what's authorized and what's not. Combined with content moderation policies that favor verified content, this shifts the incentive structure. What about international enforcement? DIAP operates across borders, but legal frameworks differ by country. The protocol itself is jurisdiction agnostic. A license token works the same way whether the studio is in Los Angeles, London, or Lagos. The enforcement layer doesn't depend on any specific country's legal framework. It depends on the technical gate, no token, no render, and the ecosystem pressure, no certification, no distribution. That said, the legal backstop varies. The EU AI Act provides strong regulatory support. U.S. state laws like the Elvis Act are expanding. Some jurisdictions have minimal protections. DIAP provides the technical infrastructure regardless. The legal teeth come from whatever jurisdiction applies to the specific transaction. DIAP makes compliance easy. The law makes non-compliance costly. They work together. What about posthumous rights? What happens to someone's identity data after they die? This is handled through the delegation and estate model. A talent can designate successors who inherit management of their vault. Not the kill switch, that either passes to the estate or follows whatever the talent specified in their DIAP settings. But consent management, license approvals, and audit access can transfer to designated representatives. This mirrors how intellectual property and publicity rights are handled legally. They pass to the estate. DIAP provides the technical mechanism for that transfer. What about minors? Child actors have unique protections. DIAP requires parental or guardian authorization for minors. A minor's vault is managed by their authorized guardian, with all the same consent controls but with additional restrictions. When the minor reaches legal age, full control transfers to them. The guardian's delegation is automatically revoked. This follows the same pattern as financial accounts for minors, managed by a guardian until the age of majority. What about AI models that have already been trained on someone's identity data before DIAP existed? Can the protocol retroactively protect against that? Honestly, no. DIAP is forward-looking. It can't reach back in time and untrain a model. What it can do is this: if content generated by that model is distributed through channels that require DIAP verification, the lack of a valid watermark or license makes it flaggable. And as DIAP adoption grows, the economic value of unauthorized AI-generated content decreases because it can't pass verification checks. The pre-existing training problem is real, but DIAP changes the incentive structure going forward. What if DIAP itself becomes compromised, organizationally, not just technically? This is why the governance model matters. Phase 1 is centralized. DIAP operates as a single authority, but the roadmap moves toward multi-stakeholder federation. The governance board includes representatives from talent guilds, studios, technologists, and independent advocates. No single entity controls the protocol. The board sets policy. Multiple authorized issuers can operate. And if the organization behind DIAP ever acts against the interests of talent, the governance board has the authority to restructure. This is the same model that governs internet standards. ICANN doesn't own the internet. The W3C doesn't own the web. They're multi-stakeholder bodies that manage infrastructure on behalf of the ecosystem. DIAP is designed to evolve into that same kind of institution. These aren't easy questions, and some of the answers are, the protocol handles this, and some are, the protocol can't solve this alone, but it changes the landscape. That honesty is deliberate. DIAP isn't claiming to be perfect. It's claiming to be necessary infrastructure that makes consent enforceable at scale, with the transparency to acknowledge what it can and can't do. That's episode 5. The security model, the honest gap, and the hard questions. No protocol survives contact with reality without being tested by edge cases. These are the edge cases, and DIAP has answers for them, some technical, some economic, some governance-based. Together, they make the case that this isn't just a good idea. It's a buildable, defensible system.